Hello, my name is Chris Heilmann. I'm the Principal Program Manager for Developer Tools in Microsoft, especially focused on the Edge Browser and the Chromium Developer Tools.
Hi, my name is Rachel Weil, and I'm a Program Manager on the Edge Developer Tools. I have a passion for CSS and front-end design.
Hi, everyone. I'm Erica Droud, and I'm a PM on the Edge Dev Tools team, and I'll be talking to you today about PWAs.
Hello, I'm Chris Heilmann. I want to talk to you today about the Chromium-based Edge and what that means for developers, what it means for us. We had a problem in the past that Internet Explorer and also the other Edge was always the odd one out. A lot of developers basically worked on Chromium-based browsers and wanted to have the same functionality and the same opportunities that we have there. That's why we said when we're going to be revamping the Edge browser, we used the Chromium project and we worked in the open source space. And that was something kind of new for Microsoft, but also amazingly powerful. With Visual Studio Code and some other open source projects, we already realized that the community out there can help us a lot building something amazing. And we realized that with the Chromium Core and the Chromium project, there's already an amazing browser out there that can do the things that we want to do. But we wanted to make sure that it becomes a Microsoft product that actually gives you as developers also the things that you need with a kind of Microsoft touch. As a company as big as Microsoft, we have different needs than other companies have. That's why we actually made the Chromium project the base of our browser, but we actually made the Edge browser our browser and gave you a lot of things in there for developers. And today I'm going to show you a few things that are coming up in the nearer future. So let's take a quick look at what's going on here right now. This is the newest browser that we have right now. This is the daily build that we have of the Edge browser. You can download that at the Insider at edgeinsider.com. And you can see what's going on every single day in the browser, what else we come up with new things. This is, for example, looks completely different to other browsers that are based on the Chromium Core. But it's something that we wanted to do. We realized that over 10 years, the Chromium project, the developer tools in there, have been grown into something that's kind of hard to use. And it's kind of hard to look at. So we wanted to make it easier for you to navigate things around and go from the developer tools to your site and back. One big thing that changed lately is that, first of all, we made the whole thing localized, so you can have the dev tools in all kind of different languages that you need. And we have a big impact or a big need for accessibility. So we wanted to make sure that all of this is keyboard accessible. We're trying very hard to make it accessible with screen readers as well. And that way, any developer of any need out there can actually use those products. I also wanted to point out that there's amazing technology in there that allows you to build accessible products. But the really interesting thing is that as Chromium is also the base of any other product out there, especially VS Code, we had a really interesting thing going, and I want to show you that quickly right now. There's an extension for Visual Studio Code, and that one allows you to embed the developer tools inside Visual Studio Code. Visual Studio Code is great because it's a text editor. It's not a heavy IDE. But the problem was you always had to jump between your text editor, the browser, and back. In the browser, you used the developer tools to tweak things around and then went back to your code and had to redo what you've just done there. So with this extension right now, we bring the developer tools inside Visual Studio Code and bring the best of both worlds together. And that's a thing that Visual Studio Code has been doing for quite some time. We already have the Git integration here. We have an integrated terminal. And we want to make it as easy as possible for developers to build things without jumping between different contexts all the time. So if you're used to the developer tools in the browser, you can now use them in the editor as well. And this was possible by moving to the Chromium project and contributing to it as well. So there's a lot of players in that project, and we're one big part of it, and we want to make the best out of it right now. So all these changes that we have in there, all these ideas, you can play with them and you can give us feedback what you think of them. There's a feedback mechanism built in there. If you want to send us feedback, just click on that and give us the information when something went wrong or you liked something. And I want to also make you think about the experiments that we have. A lot of features that you're seeing here right now are previews. They're not in there right now, but there's something that we try out. And these are the experiments that you can turn on and off to make these developer tools what you want them to be. So this is why we chose the Chromium project. This is why we're playing in it. And there's lots of interesting things coming up. So please stay interested and come and talk to us.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about what Edge developer tools are exactly. If you haven't used them before, you're interested in trying them out. So as you might imagine, they are tools for web developers who are looking to debug their website, make improvements to the look and feel, et cetera. And they're accessible directly from the browser. And so I'm going to actually open them up by pressing F12. And that shortcut will actually open the developer tools here on the right. Now, one thing that's different from the browser developer tools compared to some other debuggers is that the changes you make in your code base are pretty much reflected right away. And so you can see as I play with my website, maybe I want to inspect some of the different boxes and the text, things like that. As I look into them, I can actually not only see the code that I've authored, but I can go and play with it. So here, for example, I'm interested in maybe changing some of the spacing between items on my website. I can actually adjust those automatically, and I see the changes right away. And so this is a really cool kind of visual debugging tool and way to help you make sure your site is looking the way you expect it. Now, this is just one feature of DevTools. You can see we have a lot of tabs up across the top here. We also have a sort of bottom panel, which we call the drawer, similar to what you'd see in VS Code. And there are actually quite a lot of different tools in DevTools. You can see here, we think we have about 30 different tools within DevTools. So it's a lot to learn, but everything from performance monitoring, looking at network requests, looking at code coverage, animations, sensors. There's a huge array of things that you can do with DevTools. And so like Chris mentioned, one thing that we're really thinking about as Edge team is how do we make sure that you can focus as a developer on the things that you care about without a lot of extra noise and clutter and things like that. So what you're looking at right now is a version of the DevTools that's available in our Canary build. And we're exploring some new UI that will help kind of make the DevTools a little bit, again, a little more streamlined and easier to use. So one thing that we've done recently is we, previously, and if you're familiar with the Chromium DevTools, there are a lot of tools open. There may be some that you don't use very often. One feature we've added is the ability to close tabs that you're not interested in. And so this really helps cut down on the clutter. It's also quite easy to add tools now. We have a new plus button. So if you want to explore, try out new things like, 3D view, what is that? That looks kind of cool. And in fact, this is a way to look at your like Zendesk stacking. And kind of I can zoom in here and see in sort of a 3D representation what my site looks like, which is pretty fun. But it's very customizable, so I can choose what tools I want to see in DevTools. I also have the option to actually move my tools around. So the issues panel, for example, I'm going to move to this bottom panel, and maybe I'll close some things. I can move some things up to the top. So we've been really interested in these new abilities to customize the DevTools, again, because they are so complex. We want to make sure that when you're in debugging your website, that you can kind of get in and get out and do your debugging as quickly as possible. So I want to show a few other features that we've added recently. Again, we have this new activity bar on the left, which if you use VS Code will look very familiar to you. And the idea here, again, is around suiting your debugging tasks to whatever you're working on. So we have some kind of recommended tool groups. We have a layout group where we have some recommended tools for debugging layouts. We have a debugging group that has some commonly used tools for debugging. We also have network and optimization. And so this is a really nice way to, whatever sort of task you're working on in debugging, that you can go directly to that. We've also added another feature, which I'm pretty excited about, which is tooltips. So if you're new to DevTools, you might be looking at this and going, oh my gosh, what's happening on screen? With these tooltips enabled, you can now mouse over different parts of the UI and actually see, oh, that's what Elements does. That's what the Styles pane does. And even as I move around to different tools, I'm given information as well as links out to our documentation if you want to learn more. So hopefully all of these changes will help both our, you know, folks who've been using DevTools for a long time, as well as people who are just getting started on their web development journey. There's one other exciting feature in the Edge DevTools that I wanted to share, which is we've begun to integrate the open source WebHint project into the DevTools. We've heard from developers that one thing that's really complicated and tricky about debugging the web is figuring out how to address things like cross-browser compatibility, accessibility, things that are really hard to catch until your website is live and you're getting bugs back from your users or complaints back from your users. And so in this new issues tool, we're actually surfacing information, almost like a preventative measure or a proactive measure, telling you, not only allowing you to inspect your code, but to get sort of human real life recommendations on improvements you can make. So for example, you can open these up. CSS inline styles should not be used. Okay, I'm guilty. This is my personal website. I've been using CSS inline styles. I can actually link off the documentation to learn why this is an important fix. And I'm actually linked directly to the offending line in the code. And so this is a really cool feature. I'd love for you to give it a try and see if it helps you in your debugging workflows. This is just a little quick preview of some of the things that we're working on for the Edge DevTools to hopefully make it a little more pleasant and enjoyable and help you tackle some of your most pressing debugging tasks.
Hello, I'm back. I'm Chris. I just want to show you right now how I'm so excited about what developer tools can do for you to do the right thing without needing to know everything. So if you take a look at developer tools right now, there's a few things in there that we just put in that are wonderful to have. Accessibility is a big issue to me. Like, things have to be accessible to everybody out there. And it's very easy to make simple mistakes by forgetting something. And a good thing is right now, if I go to developer tools and I go into my code, I get these little squiggly lines right now. And every time I do that in Word as well, I wonder what's going on. So if I click on these squiggly lines, it actually gets me to the section and explains to me, if I do a shift click on it, what went wrong. What am I doing wrong here in terms of accessibility? That form elements must have labels. You can see which of the elements in your page have that problem. You can get further reading. And you don't only get the like why this is wrong, but also more details how to fix it. And you can go directly to the section in the elements tool right now to fix it there and do something else to make it better. This is a general thing that we added to them. Like the overlays that we're having right now here don't only tell you what the HTML element is and what its dimensions are, but also a contrast section in there. You can see that the contrast here is okay because it got this little green thing next to it. But if you go to other parts of the page, sometimes you actually don't have enough contrast, so people can't see these kind of things. This is also a part of the issues that we have right now. So if you go further down, you have a whole list of sections that say like these elements don't have enough contrast, so you actually have to find a way to pick another color to make sure that the color is the right thing to that people can read it and go on. This is sometimes interesting as well, with where it's like this contrast here is good right now, but I also have an interaction in there. If I turn off this and I have this interaction might not have the right contrast. So I can actually force this interaction in my developer tools as well and test it that way. So this is a very simple way to get around the page without actually having to try things out yourself. Another interesting thing is the rendering thing, where you can find out how your website looks in different environments. So for example, if people have a dark or a light mode, you want to see what that looks like. So in this case, I can't find it right now. There you go. You have a color scheme light, color scheme dark, and you have to try that all of the colors that you're using are actually compatible, and you can do the different testing if you got enough contrast again. But it's really exciting as well. You can find different deficiencies, vision deficiencies, like, for example, blurred vision. If I took my glasses off or on my phone in the sun, I would see the website like that. But you can also simulate different color blindness problems. So there you see that like using something in green and red and yellow doesn't give people information. I love that the tools don't only explain to you nowadays actually that there is a problem, but give you a visual clue what's going on. So for example, if I see here, I can see the layouts of the flex settings, all kind of things. If I want to turn on at the font family and want to do something about the font, I got visual tools nowadays and not just something that tells me something is going wrong. So take a look at all these things, turn on some of the experiments, and you will actually build accessible and flexible products without having to know all the functionality of the features there. So for example, when you go to the Flex settings here, you have a little icon that shows you how Flex CSS works without having to read it up. And I love that you can learn your craft while you're using the tools rather than having to learn it up front and then get there. And these little squiggly lines is something that I love because it annoys me. I want to get rid of that, and you should too.
PWAs, they're progressive web applications that bring all the fun stuff of the web application and all the fun stuff of a native application together. So you could access it from the web. You can actually turn pretty much any web application into a progressive web app using some easy edge settings. But also you can have it natively, so you could access it from the start menu or from an icon in your desktop. But what is a PWA? How do I use it? What's the point? So a PWA is simply created using a manifest file and a service worker added to a web application, and ta-da, you have a portable and easy to access PWA. So they are faster, they're available cross-device, they're easily installable, easy to discover, and they have growing support for advanced capabilities within the reach of the web. So it makes it a lot easier for folks to access. And so one of the other great things about having it a web platform base is there's automatic security and privacy increase. So it makes everything a little bit better there. And it's pretty similar to a native application. You probably won't be able to tell the difference because of the tighter platform support so far. And the great thing is that even though it might seem like a lot for a web application, PWAs install to the OS while running in the browser's sandbox environment. And so one of the great things that contributes to the wonderful world of PWAs is that there's something called web capabilities, which is commonly known as Project Fugu. It's a cross-company effort, and so it has the objective of making it possible for web apps to do pretty much anything that an iOS, desktop, Android, whatever app can do. And the capabilities are available to web developers through the Open Web Standards, and they all work with React.js, Angular, or any other framework that might be part of your developer stack. Microsoft Edge also now supports app identity for PWAs, which means that when you install a PWA, it registers as a hosted application, and that works with Microsoft Edge as a host. And so the main goal for PWAs is that there's consistency across all platforms and all devices, because there's the P in PWA, which is progressively enhanced properties, so that the app can be as powerful as it can be, no matter where it is. And though this may seem a little intimidating, I'll show you just how easy it is in just a minute. So let's start here at PWA Builder. So this is a super, super quick way to get started. So we'll start here with the PWA starter. This is available to everyone. And if you scroll down here, it shows the prerequisites, which I've added already. And I'll also be using the recommended development setup. And if you see here, we only have a couple steps that we have to follow. So let's head over to VS Code, where I've already cloned the repository. So here we have PWA starter. So the first thing we're going to do is run npm install. Very difficult, I know. This is probably the longest part of the process. All right, we got it. next thing we're going to do is open an instance of our brand new PWA. And there she is. So that's pretty much it. You have your PWA already set up, and you can just head back into the VS Code and add whatever changes that you'd like. Another thing that you can do is you can work with service workers. So if you run build, you'll have a service worker in there already set up for you, which is also part of the setup from before. And I'll show you some cool things that can be done with service workers now. So in the developer tools, if you go to the application pane, you'll see here the service worker that we just added. And if you go to network requests, you can see the network requests that went through that specific service worker. So we have this filter that's preloaded. We don't have any network requests because we just put this together, but they would appear there below. We also have some features here. You can see the update cycle of the service worker. And there are a few other things that we've added into the developer tools to make it easier to debug service workers, but we'll add that information into the description so you can check them out in more detail later. So we don't have it hosted yet, so I can't show you all the great things about PWAs. So let's try one very special PWA to us, Starbucks. So Starbucks, you turn it into a PWA. It's pretty much the same as the app, pretty much the same as the website. But what makes it so much better than having it as an app is it's over 99% smaller, or it takes up over 99% less space than the iOS app would. Another great benefit of having PWAs is there's one example of a real estate website in India that has over 50 million users a year. And they had the problem that a lot of the users use 2G or 3G on low-end devices and were having a hard time accessing their services. But once they switched to a PWA method, it was a lot faster, it was easier to use, and they had better UX. So this actually can help with inclusivity of a lot of other applications for developers. So I really hope you all check out PWAs soon. Thanks.
So this is the point in the show when we explore the question, tabs versus spaces, which I was just informed apparently is an outdated question, but we still love to talk about it. So Rachel, I'm going to start with you. Tabs or spaces?
So my answer is it depends. If I'm working in web code where, you know, spacing isn't quite as important, I do prefer to use tabs. If I'm working in a language that is a little more sensitive to white space, Python looking at you. I also work in 6502 and Z80 assembly. I like to do a little bit of retro computing and retro coding. And so when I'm working in those languages, often I'm working with compilers that were written, you know, in the early 80s, and they're often very spacing sensitive. So in those cases, I use spaces.
Great answer. I know that we have some retro enthusiasts that are going to be excited to hear that you are working in those spaces. Chris, where do you fall on this question?
I think we should keep it interesting and just mix them randomly if you want to, just to keep people on their toes. That the reason that I'm saying this is that our tooling has become so good that it really doesn't matter if it's a tab or a space, because we can convert the two intermittently quite easily. The only place where it really is important is when you submit your code somewhere where a tab or a trailing space can actually mean that you have a change in the version controlling that you don't want to have. And as we talked about accessibility back in the olden days when I started on the web, tabs were a problem because, for example, some displays showed them as like lots and lots of spaces. So you ended up having to scroll like horizontally just to read the indented code. But all of these things have been kind of fixed. And I find it kind of bizarre that we're still arguing about these things when the tooling space could be helping us with that. So I find it very fun to actually get people these people's faces when I'm saying like, I just do two spaces and then a tab and then three spaces just to indent it really nicely. So when you see people's faces go like wanting to kill you, that's quite fun in that. So I think we have better problems to solve in computer science than that, but it's the thing that people keep coming up with.
We have really excellent developer tools built into our browser now where you can discover these sort of strange uses of tab and space mixing now as well. So why worry? What do you think, Erica? What are you influenced by either of these more retro viewpoints?
Well, personally, like with most aspects of life, I think whatever is most aesthetically pleasing is really what's important. So that's why mostly tabs, sometimes spaces.
I can tell by your background and your very neatly organized picture frames and artwork that aesthetics are important to you. So the debate continues. We will leave it there for now and move on to explore where we can learn more about these topics. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Tabs versus Spaces to talk about web development. You can find more in the Microsoft Edge documentation. You can find Chris, Rachel, and Erica on Twitter. You can find the latest news and blogs on the Microsoft Edge developer site, as well as Edge Insiders builds and the VS Code extension for developer tools that Chris mentioned earlier. I just want to thank all my guests for joining us here today, and we'll see you next time.